Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. On this episode, we'll have in-depth coverage on Eureka opposing offshore oil drilling, four service preparations in Trinity County, and Rio Dell's handling of the Miranda's rescue investigation. But first, a rundown of today's top stories and headlines. This is KMUD News. Starting off with local news in Eureka. According to a report from the Lost Coast Outpost, Walmart is no longer considering a store at the old Kmart location on Broadway. The report is sourced from an updated agenda for next week's Eureka Planning Commission meeting. It is not clear what next steps will be for the old abandoned Kmart location in Eureka. In late-breaking national news, the U.S. and Iran are attacking each other once again. CENTCOM de-emphasized the strikes, calling the strike self-defense and stating, quote, CENTCOM does not seek escalation, but remains positioned and ready to protect American forces, end quote. Once again, things are getting lively in the Strait of Hormuz, with an unclear impact on a resolution to the Iran conflict. The Humboldt Association of Realtors will host a candidate forum for the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors 4th and 5th District races on Tuesday, May 12th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Humboldt Association of Realtors office, located at 220 First Street in Eureka. The forum is open to the general public. Participating candidates include Natalie Arroyo, running for the 4th District seat, and Evan Schwartz and Mary Burke, both competing for the 5th District seat. The forum will provide community members a direct opportunity to hear from the candidates on issues central to Humboldt County's future. For more information on attending the event or the live stream, you can call 707-442-2978. In Mendocino news, on April 17th, the Ukiah Police Department was dispatched to investigate an at-risk missing person identified as Joshua Ritalik, a 51-year-old man from Ukiah. Ritalik was known to frequent the western Ukiah area, including the Ukiah Valley Golf Course, and was last seen in the area of Maple Avenue on April 16th. During their investigation, the Ukiah Police Department contacted the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office on April 27th to request search and rescue assistance in conducting the search. On May 4th, at approximately 11 a.m., a citizen reported finding possible human remains near the western border of Low Gap Park, near the archery range. Ukiah Police Department personnel responded to Low Gap Park and were led to the area by citizen witnesses. Ukiah Police Department confirmed that human remains were found in the area and contacted the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office to conduct a coroner's investigation. Sheriff deputies responded, along with investigators from the detective unit, to assist with the coroner's investigation and recovery of the human remains. The deceased was identified as missing person Joshua Ritalik, and his legal next of kin was notified of the investigation on May 4th. Also in Mendocino, following a year-long process involving local and federal agencies, a stream located south of Fort Bragg in Mendocino County will be renamed Stanley Creek. The U.S. Board on Geographic Names and California Advisory Committee on Geographic Names recently approved the change, as the previous name is considered offensive and harmful to Native communities. The new designation recognizes Clyde Stanley, a lifelong Fort Bragg resident who made substantial contributions to his community as a World War II Army veteran and first chairman of the Sherwood Valley Tribe. With his wife Harriet, Stanley raised four children. He was a dual citizen in both the Sherwood Valley Band of Pomo Indians, a federally recognized tribe, and the Noyo River Indian Community. The effort is part of a Caltrans-initiated stream restoration project along Route 1 near Tregoning Drive. The project involves replacing a box culvert with a full-span bridge to improve fish passage, using accelerated construction methods, and will follow California Fish and Wildlife and NOAA Fisheries Service guidelines. The bridge will have wider shoulders and improved access for pedestrians. Work also includes restoring both the banks and channel to enhance habitat for anadromous fish, including the federally listed coho salmon and steelhead trout. Now, our main stories. We'll start off with an update from the Rio Del City Council and Rio Del Police Chief Joshua Finney on next steps after the felony warrant executed in April by the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department at Miranda's rescue. This is KMUD News. On April 22nd, a search warrant was executed by the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department at Miranda's rescue in Fortuna. The warrant concerned felony charges of animal cruelty, fraud, and conspiracy. In the weeks since, KMUD News has reached out to Miranda's rescue multiple times, seeking comment and to hear their side of the story, but they are not replying to any of our requests. On May 5th, part of the Rio Del City Council meeting was discussing their contract with Miranda's rescue. Many cities, including Rio Del, Fortuna, and Ferndale, have paused their service contracts with Miranda's rescue. We'll begin with Police Chief Joshua Finney, who explains more about the situation, including some limited information on what the Humboldt Sheriff's Office is investigating.
So I'd like to start off. This is the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office investigation. So the details on what is releasable is very limited at this time. It's an active ongoing investigation. But they are investigating allegations that the Miranda's rescue is unjustifiably and cruelly killing animals for profit. Those are the allegations that they are investigating. In light of this, the city has elected to suspend sending all animals to the shelter until this investigation has concluded. And that was done effective Friday when we found out. Currently, the department is not accepting any surrenders of any animals. We'd like to remind the public that it is illegal to abandon animals anywhere in the state, including Riedel. However, the police department has resources available and will connect people needing to surrender animals with local nonprofits. In the meantime, we are working with our allied agencies in the area for the temporary sheltering and treatment of any animals that come.
Chief Finney's comments were followed by Rio Del Mayor Pro Tem Amanda Carter emphasizing the city's current approach to animal control and how paying for citizens to spay and neuter their pets can be an effective solution to animal control issues.
The only thing I'm going to say is that I just want everybody to know that 2 years ago, the city of Rio Del pivoted away from shelter animal or just bringing animals to the shelter and really, really tried to do something that got at the heart of the problem, which is we set up a program where we help our community members pay to spay and neuter their pets. We offer education on trap, neuter, release if we're dealing with a feral cat population. Our two CSOs have been amazing at connecting people who call with the right people who need what information, what education. And I think that it has gone well. And I think that over the last 2 years, the amount of animals that we have historically brought into Miranda's or any other shelter has gone down. And I think that this is a really, really important thing that the city did preemptively to get at the actual problem and not just the symptom of the problem, which is a bunch of unwanted animals. Like, let's actually try to help people. I would like to reiterate to anybody watching or listening exactly what our chief just said. We have resources out there. We can try to help you instead of just throwing the dog out on the side of the road or whatever, abandoning it. If you really are in need of help, please reach out. Please communicate. We're here to help in any way that we can.
The Miranda's rescue investigation is still in progress, and we will continue to cover this issue and the municipalities involved. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. With a report on the Eureka City Council's quest to ban offshore drilling, here's Daniel Mintz.
The Eureka City Council's quest to ban offshore oil support facilities will begin with a resolution opposing offshore oil drilling and continue with changes to the city's coastal zoning. A simpler means, passing an ordinance enacting the ban, is supported by the council but was deemed to be bureaucratically undoable when it was discussed at the May 5th council meeting. City Manager Miles Slattery said a sample ordinance offered to municipalities as a template for such bans won't work in Eureka. That's because the city's local coastal plan, or LCP, allows coastal-dependent industrial facilities by right, and that will have to be modified for the ban to be doable. The LCP change is the preferred alternative to an ordinance, and there was also support for it during a public comment period. Matt Simmons, the climate attorney at the Environmental Protection Information Center, described offshore oil drilling as a menace that will meet resistance across the West Coast.
The first Earth Day was celebrated after an oil spill off the coast of Santa Barbara that destroyed ecosystems and communities and beaches for many years afterward. And so the fact that there's this big federal push now to restart offshore oil drilling off the coast of California, starting south of us, but including Northern California, is truly terrifying. EPIC supports the council taking the action of this resolution at this time. The city of Arcata did pass a resolution also opposing offshore oil. The county has moved as well. Part of the strategy here is to have communities up and down the entire state and into Oregon and Washington all say together, jointly, you know, the entire West Coast doesn't want this, to send as strong of a signal as possible.
Jen Kalt of Humboldt Waterkeeper said her group, quote, recently learned there's a deposit off our coast that is one of the only ones in the lower 48, and the USGS recently did a survey out there, so it is really a concern. She added Humboldt County has some experience with opposition to onshore support facilities.
Humboldt Waterkeeper was formed in 2004 after the city of Eureka had entered into, or almost entered into, an exclusive right to negotiate with a company that had planned on importing liquefied natural gas and building a power plant at the city of Eureka's airport in Samoa. Now, I know that's in the county's jurisdiction, not the city's jurisdiction, but that's the type of onshore support facilities that are within local municipalities' power to control. So as Matt Simmons said, you know, we as voters in the city or the county of Humboldt can't control what happens in the federal offshore lease areas. What you have control over is those onshore support facilities within the city of Eureka.
Councilmember Katie Moulton talked about a more recent showing of offshore oil drilling opposition and related some personal experience with living on a coast near drilling infrastructure.
I attended the meeting on January 18th at the Warfinger Building with groups like EPIC and Humboldt Waterkeeper, and it was standing room only. It drew a crowd from across the county. It got our congressman here to talk about it, and that there was widespread opposition to offshore drilling in general, but especially here on our pristine North Coast. And I think that any effort we can make to oppose this as a city or utilize the city's power to enact that will of the people would be appropriate. I mentioned there that I'm from the Gulf Coast side of Houston, Texas, and where there are offshore drilling rigs dotting the horizon everywhere you can look, and that the pollution that they produce makes the beaches there gross.
As recommended by staff, the council directed the support facilities ban be part of the LCP update, which will include review by the city's planning commission. The ban will become law when the LCP is certified by the state's coastal commission. Also included in the council's direction to staff is development of a resolution expressing the city's opposition to onshore support facilities. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The Trinity County Board of Supervisors meeting on May 5th included a presentation by Acting U.S. Forest Service Representative Roy Jones. The presentation focused on their staff and field operations for the upcoming season, especially concerning fire risk. Here is audio of Roy Jones's presentation at the Trinity County Board of Supervisors meeting.
So I've been here about a month and I'm kind of getting my feet under me. There's a lot of stuff going on here and I'm excited to see that. As mentioned last time, I grew up here and started my career with Forest Service here. So I'm excited to see all the great work that's going on up here. So we'll start off with some hiring and positioning. So we had some of our seasonal fire staff come on this week, and then they'll be looking to transition on May 17th to what we call our summer staffing, and they'll be working 8:30 to 1800 or 6 p.m. 7 days a week. The helicopter in Lewiston will be coming on contract that last week in May, and then they'll be available in June. And all the lookouts will be staffed come Memorial Day weekend and then on rotating schedules. Right now we have our last fire refresher going on for those new folks that came on. Every year they got to do a fire refresher to get ready for fire season. So we also got back to more like normal this year. We were able to hire some recreation and timber staff, seasonal employees at this time. So that's going to help out a lot with all these projects that we have going on. So we have a lot of stuff going on with partners, and we're working hard to finalize a lot of these projects. We're continuing to work on the Big Ranch Community Risk Reduction Project. They're looking to have that release comment period next month. And then we're working on North Trinity Community Risk Reduction Project, and that's looking to be signed here within the next month. On the Joint Shasta Trinity and Six Rivers Project on South Fork Mountain, planning also to wrap up in the next month. Our partners are also working diligently on their projects. This includes Trinity River Lumber, Wildwood, the Watershed Center, Junction City, Trinity RCD Wheaterville Fuel Break, and Sierra Pacific Industries, the Trinity Divide. All are in different phases of planning, but we're continuing to focus and try to push those through. We're getting a head start on future planning efforts, and we're starting to do surveys on some new projects, which are the Crossroads and Hayfork Community Risk Reduction. Okay, so some implementation that's continuing. The Watershed Center is planning for the Bowerman Cooperative Fuel Break. It was completed just recently. And then there's a timber sale was created under that planning effort and is now being advertised for implementation. We'll know later this month about successful bidders. The mule timber sale is looking to be advertised soon. It's a small timber sale, roughly 100 acres, that parallels Highway 3, spanning from Mule Creek Fire Station to Clark Springs. Pending clearance, the loggers and fuel crews are preparing to return to implementation on the peak emergency work completion on that fuel break. The Jack timber sale is going to begin implementation this summer, and the sale is located around the Jackass campground in the east side of the lake. This is quite a bit of die back in the area, and we're glad to get that going just to get it in a safe, healthier state up there. Crews are still preparing what areas they can in the current planning footprints. Our fuels crew and several contracts with the South Fork are creating and or finishing risk reduction treatments as a part of the High and Palm Community Risk Reduction Project. Reforestation efforts in the August footprint are still ongoing and commencing across thousands of acres this season. Next week, we have an agency administrator prescribed fire workshop, and their potential to broadcast burn in the Weaverville Community Forest or near Cedar Stock. So that's kind of what they're helping out with right now. This group's going around to different forests throughout the region, and basically it's folks that are striving to be AAs or new AAs, agency administrators, that don't have that experience. So I know they're going to be doing a burn on the Mendocino possibly too. This is all going to be weather dependent if we can, but that's what they're striving to do. For recreation, crews have snagged and brushed campgrounds and road loops and sites in the Tannery campground. They are working on cleaning up the repairs in the Hayward following the thinning. So we're working hard on that. There was a plan in place to get a tub grinder in there, to get a lot of that slash and the leftovers from that, and then that fell through. So I kind of like reached into my toolbox and reached out to the Mendocino, and they have a huge hurt and burner that they weren't using at this time. So I got that brought up here last week, and then my fuel staff worked diligently to create a burn plan for that, because typically a lot of folks don't use burn plans. But anyways, Shasta Trinity created a burn plan, and we're hoping to start using that this week and get that stuff cleaned up out. Hopefully we're going to hold on to that if the Mendocino will let us, and move a little north and work on some other cleanup. They've kind of like done a bunch of weed eating down all the river sites, getting ready for the Bigfoot Jamboree. So at this time, all campgrounds are expected to be open on time. and the cabins are open and the boat docks are put in early around Trinity Lake.
That was Roy Jones of the U.S. Forest Service with a Trinity County Forest Service update as we head into the summer recreation season. KMUD News would also like to emphasize the high fire risk in this dry year. We'll continue to bring updates from local agencies throughout our region as the fire season gets underway. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Redwood Community Radio will host Mudstock, its annual block party, on Saturday, May 16th, from noon until dusk at the KMUD Studios, 1144 Redway Drive in Redway. The free all-ages community celebration kicks off the summer festival season with a full day of live music, family activities, local food, artisans, and fundraising fun. Mudstock features a full day of music with live performances by Irie Rockers, McCainu, 3D Man, The Funicators, and many more, spanning reggae, cumbia, funk, and homegrown Humboldt sounds. Families are invited to the Spoon Circus Kids Zone, opening at 1 p.m. with circus arts, games, and hands-on fun for children of all ages. Throughout the day, attendees can browse booths from local artisans, shop the Hidden Gem Flea Market, sample offerings from new food vendors, and stop by KMUD's famous coffee booth, alongside luscious libations and locally baked treats. A full bar will also be on site, with every pour directly benefiting KMUD and helping keep community radio and your news on the air. Mudstock is one of KMUD's key annual fundraisers in support of independent community radio. The event also includes the drawing for KMUD's year-long quilt raffle with last-minute tickets available on site, a silent auction featuring Bob Massey concert posters, Grateful Dead art, musical instruments, and more collectible items donated by community supporters. Mudstock is sponsored and supported by Ink People, Creative Alliance, and Measure J. KMUD is also currently seeking volunteers to help make the day run smoothly. Community members interested in lending a hand can contact Christy at christy@kmud.org. That's Christy, C-H-R-I-S-T-Y, @kmud.org to join the team. The event is Mudstock, KMUD's annual block party, Saturday, May 16th, from noon to dusk at our studios in Redway, 1144 Redway Drive. It is free and open to the public, with all ages welcome. We hope to see you there. Last for tonight's broadcast, here's your national Native news for May 7th.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas. Across Canada this week, communities commemorated Red Dress Day with ceremonies. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the annual day, on May the 5th, has become a national day of awareness for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls.
On Parliament Hill in Ottawa and cities and towns across the country, people gathered for the 15th anniversary of Red Dress Day. They come to heal and to remember and honour the Indigenous women and girls who were murdered or who have disappeared. Mary Doust is the co-chair of the Ottawa Aboriginal Coalition.
Their voices can no longer be heard, but they can be heard through us.
People took part in ceremonies, educational exhibits, and creative activities to honour the lives and the legacies of Indigenous women and girls. The events also included drum groups and throat singers, a sacred fire and honour songs, and of course, wearing a red dress. Jenny Shawanak is an Indigenous healer and member of the Cree First Nation.
I've seen violence. I've been in communities that are impacted by this directly. I've had family members that have been victims of violence. A lot of us are in mourning, and we will be in mourning until this gets properly addressed. And we needed this day to really bring awareness and attention to it.
Vigils and marches were also held across the country. This year also marks the 10th anniversary of the launch of the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls. That resulted in an action plan with 231 calls for justice. According to the federal government, Indigenous women are 12 times more likely than non-Indigenous women to be murdered or end up missing. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
May is when the federal VIP season in Alaska really gets going, when high-ranking federal officials tour the state to roll out new policies, hand out grants, or just simply to listen to what people have to say. The Department of Interior sent some of the top people to Anchorage Tuesday for a closed-door meeting on missing and murdered Indigenous people. As KMBA's Rhonda McBride reports, they acknowledged that the number of Alaska cases reached a crisis point.
In the Cook Inlet Tribal Council's meeting room, more than two dozen Alaska Native and government leaders looked across tables at each other. Senator Dan Sullivan led the discussion.
The two top guys in America on these issues are here in this room right now.
Those two guys were Billy Kirkland, the Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs, and Brian Mercier, the head of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They came to announce the reintroduction of Operation Lady Justice, launched by Tara Sweeney during President Trump's first administration. The initiative created a task force that brought law enforcement, data collection, and justice teams together, an effort that led to a missing and murdered unit within the BIA.
All of our law enforcement working collectively on an issue of this magnitude, where we need to be cooperating and partnering, not being in silos.
This renewed federal push comes through an executive order from Interior Secretary Doug Burgum. Assistant Secretary Kirkland says it expands efforts to solve both new and cold cases and emphasizes prevention.
It's great that we're focusing on these cases that haven't been solved, but you know it would be even better if we didn't have to solve these cases in the first place.
Some of the Native leaders and MMIP advocates at the meeting, like Charlene Opuk with Data for Indigenous Justice, say hope now hinges on whether funding follows and if tribes are empowered to lead the work.
We're hoping that we see the return on investments and that it trickles down into real changes.
The gathering and the Interior Secretary's executive order was timed to coincide with a National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous People. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And I'm Jill Freitas.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Michael McCaskill, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianca Frederico, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located in the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyut, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.